I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. And Smiley, we have just a laundry list of items to get to tonight. You are, you're in Baltusrol? Is Baltusrol a place? I know it's a golf course. You're there to play the golf course, but I don't even know how to say where you are right now.
Yeah, just here in here at Baltusrol. I don't know what else to say. I get it tomorrow here all day, and
Smiley in Baltusrol.
It's a sweet place. Yeah,
we have a winner of a national open on the men's side. We have a winner of a national open on the women's side. We have an unfortunate Sunday performance of the Hope Valley member that we're gonna have to dig into. But I think we have to start with a little house divided action, that because I love this so much. I'm out there, you know, trying to grind out an appearance in the shootout at Hope Valley today, and I look down at my phone and I'm like, am I misreading this? Is Smiley's dad trash talking me? Like,
oh yeah.
Have you even met my dad yet? I've not met him. I mean, he's helped us with a number of things for the show. And I have him in there. I have a little squirrel emoji next to his name. Is his nickname the squirrel or something?
Oh yeah. Gets up and down from where the squirrels hang out. So that's how he got the nickname.
So I got a trash talk text from the squirrel man on Hope Valley today. The Bayou Bengals, the LSU Tigers, won 8-4. I think that just finished as we're speaking right now. Mm-hmm. We beat y'all 6-2 on Saturday. And so now it goes to a little rubber match.
With no arms. Nobody's got arms. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens tomorrow in that game, because it's going to be, I think, a very high scoring affair.
Yeah, this is and I love this so much, because despite the fact that I grew up playing a fair amount of baseball, you are the seam head on this podcast. You are like deep in the baseball talk, which I love for you. I love the heels. I follow a lot of, you know.
Do you know who Harrison Endicott is?
I do. Okay. Yes.
Who is he?
Wait, actually, you think you caught me. Are you talking about, I know Vance Honeycutt, the center fielder.
Did I just get him confused, the golfer and the,
I was like, is this a trick question? Because Harrison Endicott is the golfer.
He's the golfer, right.
Vance Honeycutt's the center fielder. I was almost, you scared me there, because I was really going to try to go out on a limb.
That worked out even better, because it just got you in a cobweb, and then it turned back and backfired on me, because you don't know who Harrison Endicott is? I mean.
I do, and also, what is his relevance to this conversation?
Vance Endicott is the really good, Honeycutt.
Great Kyle. Baseball name, by the way. Vance Honeycutt.
Yes. I thought I knew North Carolina baseball, but apparently I don't. I can't remember this guy's name. It reminds me so much of Harrison Endicott. Got too much golf in me.
That's us. We're bringing it all together. We're giving you a little golf, baseball. Yeah. So he had a great day on Saturday. He was looks like he was 0-for-5 today, which is not
y'all can
ideal.
Play some defense, man. Y'all got some guys that can hit out of the park too. I'm a little nervous for tomorrow because it y'all have like even though we won the game, y'all kind of picked the momentum back up. So I'll probably be having that on tomorrow when I'm out here doing golf stuff.
I love that for you. I'm in the process of trying to get our home packed up so we can move. So I'll probably throw that on and watch.
When are you moving?
Moving in June. Actually, 2 days after the U.S. Open, which is
Isn't
great
it
scheduling
it is
on
June.
My part. It is June. We are in June. Okay. Yeah.
Can you care to be more specific or no?
It's June 18th, I think, is the day we move in. Nice. So, which is like, yeah, we're packing up the whole house the day after the U.S. Open and then moving the day after the U.S. Open. And then
I see no problems there.
None whatsoever. And then if you really were like, hey, how could you make this even harder on yourself and your wife? Then it's like, you know what else you could do is you could play in a member guest tournament that weekend. And then the following week, you could go to Scotland with your dad for 10 days.
You know where I stand on your golf. I think you play entirely too much golf. I'm going to side on your wife's side on all this. I think you do play too much golf, but go off king.
You know what? For the first time in a long, long time this weekend, it was driving my cart down after we missed the shootout, spoiler alert, to my car and sadly loading my clubs in the trunk. I had like the last spot in the parking lot because I got there late today. Said I had the final tee time on a championship Sunday. There were no parking spots.
Oh, y'all were in the final?
Like, last group on Sunday and couldn't get it done. Yeah. By the way, like I felt like this is the best place to let it all out because, you know, do I know anybody else who had the last tee time on a Sunday who just didn't have their A game and you know it happens. It happens to the best of us. So,
Shanks.
I did not have the shanks. We fixed the shanks. Yeah, I mean, we're just all over the place now. So we're just gonna. Yeah, it was basically we were. We just couldn't get it. We could not get it going. And it was actually a little, we started the day 2 shots off the lead in our flight. So we were in the final pairing with the leaders, Scott McCullough, Jimbo Huckabee, great A+ dudes. They actually won the whole thing. They won the shootout. So
speaking of an A+, that second name is an A+ golf name.
Jimbo Huckabee.
Oh my
great guy.
In my next life, I want my name to be Jimbo Huckabee. Huckabee or Huckabee?
Huckabee. Huckabee.
That's an all-timer name. I can already picture what the guy wore today. Just probably the 3 or 4 buttons and almost all the way unbuttoned, wore the white visor, light blue shirt, semi-popped collar. Is this the guy? Am I looking at him?
How are you nailing this?
I mean, it's pretty obvious.
I mean, you've nailed Jimbo Huckabee. Yeah, white visor, light blue shirt, couple buttons loose.
I mean,
just
it's
hanging,
just a
having
no-brainer.
A good time.
You can't have a name like that and not show up to the tee with like a big old cup from Hope Valley, and he's the only guy in the club that puts ice in his beer. That's like the type of guy that Huckabee is. Like, this is that guy, right? Am I off there?
I mean, you're going further in this research than I have ever done in my life. So I'm going to need to like actually kind of go and do a little more research and get back to you. But he does have his own custom Carolina blue cart, jamming some tunes out of there, you know, with a little phone clip on the side. And his partner, Scott, is like the life of the party. So we were heading to the day. We're like, good vibes. We're like 2 shots off the lead, top 2 teams in the flight. Get to make the playoffs, and just one of those days, man, just kind of had it neutral all day long. And then where it ended up going is we would have had to shoot net 5 under today to have a chance at making the playoff. And we had nowhere near that game. Like, it was like, if we needed 1 or 2, it would have felt a lot worse, but I think we were net 2 over on the day.
All right. Can you tell me a little bit about the weather y'all had this week there? Because I was sitting there looking at the scores of the Korn Ferry Tour event and they were not very low at all. So was the weather bad or was this golf course that they played on the Korn Ferry Tour in Raleigh really hard?
So as we've talked about a couple times, like I played that course last year in the Pro-Am with Patrick Fishburne, who nearly won the Zurich a couple weeks back with Zach Blair. And I thought it was a challenging golf course. They just redone the greens with like a newer strain of bent grass that is apparently
more heat resistant.
Exactly. Performs better in the summer months when traditionally bent, you know, you got to let it grow. You can't cut it. You're going to kill it.
That's what we got.
And so, you know, cause like everything around here now for the most part's gone to Bermuda, but it was interesting that Raleigh did that with this heat resistant strain of bent. And, I thought it was a challenging test for sure, but there was nothing in the weather this weekend that would have indicated an inability to score. In fact, I thought the weather was pretty perfect. I mean, the worst we had today was it was a little cloudy to start the day and maybe a few droplets of rain. And I guess we're Durham, so I don't know exactly. Maybe it was like something micro in Raleigh where they got a little bit of rain or something, but it was perfect. Wind blew a little bit today, but nothing like it was, couldn't have been more than 12 miles an hour at most. So yeah, that's another investigation we're gonna have to undergo.
Yeah, there you go.
A lot of stuff happened in the Triangle. Had the Corn Ferry Tour event, which was of course second only to the Hope Valley member. Had the UNC LSU regional. I mean, we were hustling and bustling down here in North Carolina this week.
Heck yeah, I'm definitely gonna watch the baseball. The Corn Ferry Tour event. They're just lucky that Harry Higgs didn't play because he would have won three in a row. That was a fun episode. If you hadn't listened to Harry Higgs speak the good golf. Man, he just had some great golf knowledge that he was preaching to all of us last week. So that was a fun episode. But we definitely got a lot of golf to talk about. I know we probably didn't get to watch as much golf this weekend as we probably normally would. But from everybody that I followed on Twitter, they were just so complimentary of how good of a golf day it was on Sunday to have the U.S. Women's Open and the RBC Canadian Open on two TVs. It's like a good day for like a four screen setup, baseball, golf, and you just kind of had it all today, right?
It was killer. In fact, as I was starting to kind of smash the eject button in our tournament, I was, you know, paying more and more attention to what was going on in each of these two events, and it was awesome. I'd say off the top that, you know, again, we strongly claim this pod. We're a dad pod. In fact, it was great. The only thing that brightened my day was walking off the last green and my son running up to me and picking him up. And I was like, oh, this is a nice little boost of a little shot in the arm of a good smile on my face and a warm feeling. And then flipping over then to watch the end of the RBC Canadian Open and seeing Bob McIntyre win with his dad. I believe Dougie McIntyre is what I saw on the broadcast.
That name is 10 out of 10. If you're in a golf fantasy pool league to where you have the opportunity to have a username or just a team name, I think Dougie McIntyre has got to be considered. It is a 10 out of 10 Scottish name, and I hope that somebody calls me Dougie McIntyre. Or what's your boy's name that you played?
Jimbo Huckabee.
Jimbo Huckabee. Those are like my two names right now that I, in another life, I wish were my names.
Or how about Vance Honeycutt? Like, we're actually putting together like an all-star roster of names in this episode, just right out the gate.
I mean, man, if I'm not mistaken though, right, Charlie? I mean, you're looking for a name right now.
I'm looking for, yes, for a daughter. Are we talking about naming my daughter? Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. I will just go.
Honeycutt Hume?
Honeycutt Hume is certainly something. We're not going to name her Dougie, I'll tell you that much. And we sure as heck are going to name her Jimbo.
Hume is so
we're not
going to
name her Jimbo. I mean, that's.
What's Jimbo's last name again?
Huckabee Hume. Don't look at me like that. Don't look at me like Hold that.
On. Can we like maybe combine them all with like, let's do Dougie, Huckabee, Hume.
And we'll call her
B.
I mean, I can't. I don't know how we have this thing so off the rails. Well, we've not talked about a single shot on any professional tour to this point in the podcast, and we're naming my daughter B after Dougie Honeycutt Huckabee Hume. I'll write it down. I'll put it in the suggestions box, and then when it comes time to open that up, my wife and throw some out there, I'll make sure that it gets heard. I can't guarantee anything, but we'll make sure it makes it to the decision day, whatever it's going to be for names. anyway, so Dougie, first of all, Dougie had like one of the most banger opening lines, like first time you've been on TV, first time you're doing an interview on national television. Your son just won his first PGA Tour event. He's emotional. He's choked up. A couple weeks before Father's Day in the United States, and Amanda Baliones puts the mic in front of his face, and he says, "I'm just a grass cutter." And you're just like, "Oh, right in the fields."
Heck yes.
It's just so good, man. That was just, I mean, moments like that, you know, again, we're very much like immersing ourselves in the dad life right now and loving every moment of that and seeing things like that. I think before you're like, okay, this is like whatever Hallmark, you know, movie channel type stuff and great. And but it just kind of hits a little different now. And I just think moments like that, it just really, it's hard to not get emotional seeing the joy that those two were able to share on a Sunday, winning a national open, just really, really cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. And how about I saw this tweet. I kind of mentioned this to you. And yes, you're absolutely right. Dougie's first words after winning press conference, or not a press conference, a interview with Amanda. That's pretty damn good. But how about this tweet from Adam Kirk? Have you seen this yet?
No. Please read.
Bobby Mack is racking up quite the portfolio of National Open performances. The Canadian, he's got a W. The Italian, he's got a W. Scottish Open second. The Cyprus Open, I'm not sure exactly what would that be.
Cyprus is like, I think it's near Greece.
Yeah,
third. We're definitely disclaimer. We're not a geography pod, so we'll Google it and get back to you. I think we got a bind on this in a recent episode as well. But I think I want to say Cyprus is in the Greece neighborhood.
Yeah, and Wilbur is in the Eastern Time Zone, if anybody's wondering. Yes. And that's besides the point. The Mexico Open T6, the Open Championship T6, the Kenyan Open T7, Turkish Open T7, French Open T8, Irish Open T13, and South African Open T15. This guy just has a flair for...
Loves the National Open.
For the people. The hometown people. He just shows up when it matters the most. We got to get this guy to Australia for the Aussie Open, because that's got to be his next task, is go win there. Bobby Mack and Dougie head over to the Aussie Open.
So I'm kind of glad that you're pulling on the National Open thread here, because we actually had an Instagram message from a listener, a viewer named Mike. I think it was Mike Fritz. I don't know if I have that right. But and by the way, if you're ever interested in having us discuss something on the podcast, help us build that rundown. Tweet at us, send us an Instagram message. We will take any and all of it and see if we can work it into the show. But just asking about, as we talk more and more about a global tour and the places we need to go around the globe to big, you know, air quotes, grow the game. Just asking why the Canadian Open doesn't have a more, in one sense, elevated feel, like more in the theoretical sense, but like I think he's asking in a literal sense of like, why is this not a signature event? You know, why are we not ensuring that there's a full strength of field for this sort of field if we're trying to make the tour more global, especially for North American players who it's not a super long trip up to Canada? Now, like I'll maybe go ahead and answer the first part of that question right off the bat, because it'd be almost impossible to go signature, major, signature.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't ask guys to play that much. But I don't know if like, is there a way to reconfigure the schedule a little bit to get this thing to where, I mean, there were great names in this field for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, how is there a way we can get this thing to be top tier, have a signature event field, you know, every single year, because of the importance of doing the sort of more of a global tour and elevating these national opens, really, as Rory said a number of different times.
Yeah. Well, I think you make great points. I mean, where it's sandwiched in the schedule, it's hard to get, you know, all of the top guys to play unless it's more points, or there's got to be some more value to it, knowing that before and after the U.S. Open, and everybody knows how grueling of a test the U.S. Open is and how taxing that is on your body. So I'm not surprised to not see the field be as sharp as you like it to be. But the Canadian Open is it's until you go and experience one yourself, the crowds, I mean, people come from everywhere. It's not just a hometown event. It's a nation's event, in which doesn't matter where the event is. It used to be at what's the golf course just outside of Toronto. The name is Glen Abbey is the name of it.
Yeah.
But now that it's rotating more, I think that's pretty dang cool that it's, you know, in so many different locations and allows you know, the entire nation to kind of get a, you know, a glimpse of the best players in the world, which I know that's not exactly the best players in the world and where we sit right now in the game, but you know, you're getting a very high level feel with Rory McIlroy, Sam Burns, Tom Kim. You see the rest of the guys on the top of the leaderboard. All the Canadian players played and they're very high level, but you know, I think this golf course really, I wish was the one they played every year because man, did it look really good on TV. It tested, you know, I don't think it favored one type of player. Mm-hmm. I think the leaderboard showed that it had long hitters. It had good putters. It had a really good mix of you know, the Rory type of bomb hits it really long off the tee. And then a guy like, you know, Bobby Mack is not nearly as long as Rory by any means. But he had a really good week on the green. So there was a lot of ways to do it. The scores being, you know, right at that 15-16 number is also a great test of, hey, that's right where you want it to finish at the end of the week too. So, and I definitely want to get into a little bit of a conversation too, Charlie. I don't want this to go too far into this for us to not talk a little bit more in depth about Robert McIntyre and the quotes that have come out with him probably over the last month or two, just kind of talking about how he's been homesick. He hasn't felt the love. He hasn't felt the camaraderie like he's felt on the DP World Tour. You know, he doesn't have as many friends. I think there's something to that. And yes, I read that he had his mom come cook for him at the PGA Championship. And what do you know? He contends. And then he has his dad on the bag a couple weeks later and he wins. So, you know, just want to hear your kind of thoughts too on just the way you view that and a guy that comes from overseas that, you know, we've seen a lot of players have a ton of success and do this, but Robert McIntyre has been kind of open and vocal about, you know, this hadn't been as easy.
It's such a good topic of discussion because I think it folds back into almost the discussion that we are having about the event itself and, you know, growing the game and having a more global tour. I understand entirely why, if your bread and butter are American superstars and those are the guys coming through your ranks and, you know, a lot of the system is set up to, you know, just by definition, be an American centric sort of worldview for this tour, that those are the people are going to cater to the most. And if you're asking them to travel a bunch and, you know, just be fatigued or exhausted or have these schedule demands that are really, really tough to commit to every sort of stop they're going on a global tour, why you might say, hey, let's just really focus on doing the best version of a domestic tour. And of course we'll go to, you know, we'll go to Canada, we'll go to Mexico, you know, we'll of course go over, you know, to play the Open Championship and the Scottish and things like that. But like largely this thing's going to be based in America. I get why it's been designed in that way, but you do it at the expense of a guy like Robert McIntyre. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we're kind of seeing with some of the live defections too, I think you do it at the expense of other guys who would love to just be closer to something they know and love and be at home a little bit more often. Because I think that would largely be the objection of most American stars to a global tour. It's like, hey, I want to be able to fly back home or get back home between tournaments, see the family, spend some time there. I don't want to have to just sort of live this life where I'm just FaceTiming people I love and feeling lonely, feeling on the road all the time and not be able to kind of have a somewhat of a balanced life, as balanced as one can have as a professional athlete in a major sport. So I think it's a really tricky one. And it's reading those quotes from Robert McIntyre, you feel for the guy for sure. And it's almost like, for him, this is the only way his dream culminates. Like, if you want to play golf at the top end of the food chain, you have to go play on the PGA Tour. And the PGA Tour is based in America. And so, you know, he has to kind of weigh that and say, because I'm sure there are a lot of guys that are just like, you know what, I'm just content to stay on the DP World Tour because that's just a better lifestyle for me. And it's going to be weaker fields and less money, et cetera, et cetera. But this is just a better, more balanced lifestyle. Whereas he makes a choice to come over here. And I really think that, you know, that's why I think the live is so intriguing to a lot of guys, because it's like, you know, it comes with a whole host of other issues if you're trying to play long-term professional golf with world ranking points, et cetera, et cetera. But it is something where you can say, hey, we're going to be over in these, and we're not going to play as much. So even between those events, I can go to the places that feel like home to me and spend time with people I love. So I think that's a really interesting one. And I'm really glad for, you know, Bobby Mack that he got a win and can feel a little bit of that. All right. Okay. This was all worth it.
Hey, did he qualify on the DP World Tour points to make the Ryder Cup last year? I don't believe he was a pick, correct?
That is correct. I believe he was in, if I remember this correctly, let me go back and check. I believe he was like in the one of the last spots from the European points list, not the world points list. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that to me, when I sit here and kind of look at his results over the last year, and he has played very, very bad this year. It's been either feast or famine. He's had actually three top tens, but he's had so many missed cuts. You know, he's batting probably below 50% in making cuts, but it's kind of weird. He had a top 10 at Zurich. So it's like the team thing. And he was, you know, you could tell that he was loved by so many at the Ryder Cup. When you see some of the videos that came out after, the guys celebrating and them on the bus, and you see Bobby Mack was standing up celebrating. And that's kind of my memory of him, and Justin Rose. Like Rosie just kind of, you know, you could tell like Bobby Mack was not comfortable. Like he hit some really good shots, don't get me wrong, but he needed a guy like Justin Rose to be like, everything's okay. Like we're fine. And it's really good to see a guy like him, who really does come across as a very likable guy, you know, very genuine, love the way he speaks. He's very open and a very good golfer, don't get me wrong, but he's definitely had his struggles this year. So to go out and do it on a, you know, a difficult golf course. You know, I'm very happy to see him get the win. And when he was leading after 36 holes, I was kind of thinking, and it's like, man, after that PGA Championship, having a good week, I was kind of thinking that it could be his week. And he had plenty of guys trying to run him down, but he was able to stay on top.
Well, so let's kind of run down that leaderboard a little bit. First of all, shout out to Tar Heel, Ben Griffin, finishing second.
Hey, did you see the sunglasses thing of it? Have you heard about this?
No, tell me.
Yeah, so Ben, you missed this. He did an interview with Amanda on Saturday after his round. Okay. He's wearing like these aviators, and it threw me off. I was like, what? Like, Ben's just gone like full aviators mode. I was like, maybe this is just kind of a bit. Like, he maybe thinks he just looks good in them. But he's got 20/20 vision, according to him. But Ben was telling the people watching, or telling Amanda, that he's got like the Family Guy Peter Griffin floaters going across his eye. He's got like a couple of those that he sees. So he says sunglasses help negate it a little bit. You know what episode of your Family Guy guy?
I was a Family Guy guy. I don't know if I watched all the seasons, but I watched a few in
school. There was an episode where like Peter Griffin he was like a floater. I think he was like riding a worm or something. Like he was like the floater, or maybe it was like a worm that looked like Peter Griffin, like floating across. Yeah.
So he has floaters in the sunglasses cut down on them.
That's what he said.
So interesting.
He had a great week too. I mean, I was actually kind of, because with Ben, if he hits it good enough, like off the tee, he's very good the rest of the way. It's for him, it's all about just putting the ball in play. And if he does a good job of that, then he's a good spot. Tee to green this week, he was third. So that's when Ben Griffin has a chance. And that's what happened this week.
Yeah. And I mean, the 18th could have gone. I mean, he took an aggressive line there and just missed a little bit left of the green. But if he hits that tie and makes birdie, we're potentially headed for a playoff. So go Heels. Go Ben Griffin. Victor Perez makes a big putt to get to 14 under.
Yep.
That you know, again, I think at the time was thinking, okay, this, you know, let's see what these two guys do, but this could be a playoff situation. And then going to a star pairing of Tom Kim and Rory McIlroy that shoot matching 64s on Sunday. And that's one that I kind of want to unpack a little bit, because
I think so too.
I think those two guys, as we head into a signature event, as we head into the US Open, just kind of getting a gauge for both of their games. You know, as we know, Rory's been playing very well, has had some, you know, all the stuff off the course that, you know, it's I would be speculating to, you know, if I was saying whether or not that is hurt or helped, you know, maybe in some ways just like he can kind of get that off his mind and really focus on his golf. And maybe that's a boost for him. I'm not sure. But, you know, Tom Kim, a guy who has maybe had a little bit of an up and down go, his caddy, of course, left for Ludwig Oberg's bag. And they had Paul Tesori, who went from Cam Young's bag to briefly Brendan Todd's bag and then ended up on his bag. And I'm just wondering, you know, let's maybe start with Tom Kim, since he's a guy that we haven't really talked about a ton this year, of just what you think this finish does for him as we head into a stretch of the season where he's played good the last couple of years, like in this sort of June, July, you know, part of the calendar over the Scottish Open, the Open Championship. Could this be sort of him hitting his stride this year?
You know, it very well could be, but I think you got to start with when a guy is not playing well, he's not had a good year, and he shoots a 6-under on Sunday. It's like, all right, let's just see what were the circumstances. Like, was he close to the lead? I mean, shouting distance. But who was he playing with? Was it a random person? Well, it wasn't. It was Rory McIlroy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get the biggest crowds, and it's an opportunity for you to go prove to yourself, hey, you know what? I can go out and play shot for shot with Rory McIlroy. And that's what he did on Sunday. Like you said, shooting a matching 6-under 64. I mean, that's huge, man. This guy, his best finish this year is a T17. After that, it's a T24. I mean, the guy has not had a top 10 this year until this week. He's only missed three cuts, but he's done nothing. Really nothing, no type of real low rounds that we were accustomed to seeing from Tom. Like we saw at Las Vegas, we saw at Wyndham. And you know, you just, it's very odd. His scoring average just on the weekend has just gotten worse and worse. He's 110th on Sundays this year with 70.42. So that's a big step today. Go out, shoot a 64. I mean, there's no doubt there's plenty of game with this guy, but, he's had a lot of hurdles this year. And, I read that he said that he was in the bad draw. Data Golf actually said you're actually been your top 20 in the correct draws.
Wow. So,
but I remember talking to him at the Players, and he had just switched back to his old coach. I think Sam Sire is his name. His name's kind of escaping me. I'm like 99% sure that's right. Which was the coach when he had turned pro and was working, with a coach, that's who he came out with. And he's had a bunch of different coaches over the years. I say over the years, really just over the last year and a half. He's kind of bounced around a little bit. Cam McCormick, Chris Coleman, now back with Sam Sire. So I think he finally was getting settled. You know, it's not easy going from, you know, having all the success to, all right, now my caddy's left. I'm changing coaches. And I think it just kind of caught up to him a little bit. Netflix, I mean, the stage just gets a little bit bigger, right? Expectations get higher. And I think for Tom, he's a guy that he wants to be the best. And if you've watched the Netflix episode of his that was a feature, that comes across. He wants to, you know, be friends with Scotty and all these top players to pick their brains because he wants to be as good as them. And guy, he's so easy to cheer for, such a nice guy. And him and Paul Tesori, they seemed so confident, like going right into the Players Championship. And on Wednesday night into Thursday morning, he gets sick. So it's just like another thing. It's like they feel so good about like their games in a good spot. And then he gets sick and now he can't play. And now it's just taken a little bit of time for him to get his feet underneath him. And man, now I'm thinking Tom Kim, it's like, all right, that's a huge round. Now what can we build on that? Can we go out on a Thursday and find yourself in the top 10 of the leaderboard right from the get-go? Like, you can't go out and just lose all that momentum. It's a perfect opportunity to go out and just continue to come, you know, let's go shoot for, you know, another 4 or 5 under round. I mean, it's Memorial next week. You never really know. If it's really firm, go out and shoot a 2-under. If it's really soft, go out and shoot a 6-under. Yeah. But what he needs to do is continue to build off that. And I'll let you kind of take Rory, but that's my Tom. That's my Tom bit.
Well, I mean, I think to wrap on Tom, I mean, it is interesting how often we've had this discussion in the past, maybe, you know, or at least just this year, but really the past couple months, of guys that have had, you know, swing coach changes and just a couple things that they're working on. And we're talking like top elite players where just trying to kind of find it. I mean, Victor Hovland for sure is one of them where it kind of clicks back into place. I know Colin Morikawa maybe a little bit. It was one of the guys that we talked about there as well. And so, you know, just trying to find the right voice to tell you the thing that you need to hear. It is a very obviously difficult thing, and you know this far better than I do because you played at the high level, but it just seems to me that is a recurring theme we've seen amongst, you know, some of these guys that you're just wondering, like, hey, we know this guy's a really, really good player. Why are they just a little bit, you know, off the mark? And so that's an interesting one for Tom, just seeing what kind of form he can find. And, you know, if the goal is to ramp up to win a major championship, this is a nice way to take some momentum into the last event before it and then kind of use that as a springboard to go out and try to win one at Pinehurst, which, you know, I it'll be interesting to see how that venue suits him as a shorter hitter.
I think it's a good venue for him, and there really isn't any weakness in Tom Kim's game. Yeah. I would say that he needs to make his strengths just be a little bit higher. You know, just I don't think there's any part of his game that'd be like, you know what, he really needs to go and work on that. I mean, if the only thing you would say is maybe you should go try to hit it further, but that, right, you know, what he's really good at is hitting it straight. So, I mean, he's a top 20 driving accuracy type of guy. So you don't want him to go and try to just rip at everything. But I think for Tom, it's like a week at like US Open is probably a little better fit than Memorial. Watch him go win next week. Yeah. That'll be hilarious. But
pull that clip.
It seems like ball is going to be rolling out more. I think he'll have an opportunity to kind of lean on his iron game, and he's been a bit of a streaky putter since he's gotten out on tour. But when his good putting is good, it's really good.
Yeah, I think, you know, for Tom, I'd be really interested to see if at some point he pursues something like Xander Schauffele did this offseason, just to try to pick up a little bit more speed, you know, and not lose too much of the straight. Right. I mean,
he's got the body, like, dude, he's got the lower half, man. If you go see him in person,
strong,
he's a brick truck down like below the belt.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting, but I mean, that's a topic for another day, but that's the one that struck me, you know, just watching Xander's sort of evolution progression. Don't have to be the longest on tour, but if you can just gain a few more miles per hour and a, you know, a couple more yards, you know, at least you're not fighting an uphill battle as often. So to flip it to Rory, I mean, there's not a ton to say about the stuff that's happened in the past. We know how good he's playing right now. Won the Wells Fargo going away. You know, this is another strong performance. I think he had one bad round this week to kind of put him out of it, but, you know, could have, you know, won this one easily without that one. Kind of spinning this forward all the way to the US Open on the same topic of course fit. I wonder how much of what Rory does well, just absolutely crushing the driver, works at Pinehurst.
It does. Know? It works.
You think so? Even if it's going to feel some tighter, you know, in a lot of you know, landing areas for driving off the tee.
Listen, I've played a US Open in a similar type of setup that they're going to have, and I felt fine. So okay. if I felt fine and I was good,
Hi-ya King.
Well, this is back when I wasn't high on it then.
Oh, okay, good.
But I felt really comfortable out on that golf course. And I can't imagine why Rory wouldn't either. It's all that place is, as you know, it's all the green complexes. And
yes,
but it's from the people that I've talked to that have recently gone and done scouting trips. Excuse me. It's very similar to was in 14. You're going to have a ball that gets in the middle of the fescue, the sanded fescue area, that you're going to have a swing, and then you'll be 3 yards or 2 yards in, and you're going to have to punch it 20 yards down the fairway. So a bit of potluck when it comes to that. And, but a day that you go out and hit 12 fairways, I mean, you should have a guy like Rory. I mean, how firm we think that golf course might be, he's going to have short irons in and opportunities to chase down Scottie Scheffler, who'll have a 4-shot lead.
Yes. Yeah. Just fast forward to that. You just mark that down in Sharpie right now. I guess and my question stems from exactly what you're describing there, which is I actually played it like in March with a buddy of mine. And It's just in a much, much shorter version of the course than you're going to see for the U.S. Open, of course. But it just so the most recurring theme that you have off the tee there is hitting a shot that you think is going to be fine. And then it gets on the ground. It starts rolling. It's always firm out there. And it kind of goes into those sort of sandy areas with some native grasses, and it's a total crapshoot. I mean, it could just bump up against one that has a thick stem, and you got nothing in front of you, and you have no shot. Or it could just kind of trundle along and kind of miss everything, and it's perfectly fine. You can pick it out of there, and it's no problems. And so I just wonder on an especially firm version of that course for a U.S. Open, if some longer hitters are hitting it to landing areas that are perfectly fine, but getting a little bit of rollout and just getting some funky lies, if that's going to be something that hurts guys. But that's just my own harebrained theory based on my version of the course. But it's tricky at Pinehurst. That's no news to anybody listening to this podcast.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I'm going back to see what I shot, because I'm curious about the 2014 U.S. Open to see where I finished, and I guess I didn't do very good because I'm still scrolling. There I am. 73, 76 plus 9, missed the cut by 4. Yeah, but
importantly, dude, figured out how to read a yardage book with Lucky. Yes. Earlier in the week, that was crucial.
I did not realize how hard this golf course played, though. I'm sitting here looking at T45 was 10 over, and there was a dude on the weekend that made the cut that shot 88-76.
I mean, I again, all from an amateur's perspective, but like every time I go and play this golf course, you know the type of golf course I'm about to describe. It's basically like when you're going and playing a course that either is like a, you know, ranked in the top 100, not that has to mean anything, but just like there's a course that everyone wants to go play, or it has some huge amount of history, so you're excited to go play it, and you're going through the round, you're almost like, I have to smile. We're having fun here. I'm happy to be a Pinehurst, you know, because it just kicks your teeth in, and you're trying to enjoy it and take in the sights and the scenery and have fun. But of course, you know, shooting a million is never fun for anybody, but it's just that type of course where it's just really, really hard all the time. And it's hard on a number of reasons. It's like, it's hard because in a very obvious way, the green complexes where it's you know, lightning fast Bermuda, and there's all sorts of undulations, and you're never really comfortable over a putt because you think it looks like it's breaking one way, but you're trying to read the grain around the cup and could it pull back this way, and everything's sliding and quick. You know, that's a more obvious way, but also just the small stuff where you're like, you're staying on a tee and you hit a good shot, you're like, great, finally I can exhale and mm-hmm. go have a stock approach. And you get up there and you're like, it's 2 feet in the native area up against grass. You're like, are you kidding me? This again? Now I'm going to be sweating out a par save, you know, for the fifth or sixth or seventh time of the day. It's just a really, really tough course. And obviously the pros play it far better than I did, but it's just one of those ones where I think it's, you know, it's gonna be dialed up for the U.S. Open. I think it's gonna be very low scores this time around.
You do?
I think so. I mean, dude,
I'm just sitting here looking at the scores from 14. I mean,
oh, wait. Are you saying? Oh, sorry. Let's clarify here. I meant the winning number is going to be a single digits, a low number. I'm sorry. I should have phrased that better. But you know, we were talking about absolute numbers, winning numbers. I don't think anyone's going to take it deep at the U.S. Open. Let me rephrase
that. Okay. All right. I had the opposite. Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I was like, I just told you guys had 88 on Saturday there. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into that. And luckily, we have a really big golf tournament next week. I mean, I think it's kind of exciting to see who's going to be in form. But, is Rory going to win next week and then go to the U.S. Open and like similar to the PGA? Like, I'm a little worried that he's going to go and win either one of the Memorial or the Travelers. I have this feeling that the U.S. Open for Rory, it's just I don't even have him on my radar right now. But the Memorial and Travelers, I'm like, yep, he's probably winning there.
It's so strange because it's hard to describe why, but I have the exact same feeling around him. It would be such a Rory McIlroy thing to do, just pick off like three signature events consecutively and just not be able to get it done in a major. I just, and again, you may differ from me. Like, I don't love Pinehurst for Rory, but I think, you know, Memorial and especially Travelers for him, I just feel like, you know, those are places where I could very easily see him running away with it. We'll have to kind of see how it shakes out. But I mean, he's playing great golf right now. And it's just, I think a lot of it as amateur psychoanalysis here is just, there's just something around it being 10 years since he's won a major. Mm. And it's like, you know, I think he's going to have to break the seal at some point if he wants to win the Masters, complete the career Grand Slam. It's just, he feels like it has to be that way.
Yeah. We're going to set to wait and see with him. And, you know, I was, from what I saw from Rory, you know, it's just not surprising. I think he just got off to a little bit of a slow start. Maybe I think it was his second round is what lost him the tournament this week. I think he shot like even par or something like
72, that. 72, yeah. 66, 72, 65, 64. So he lit it up on the weekend.
Yeah.
So let me actually hear, while we're kind of on a similar topic of major championship venues and tests, you know, we'd be remiss to not mention Yuka Saso wins the U.S. Women's Open at Lancaster. And boy, was there all sorts of content coming out of Lancaster this week.
Oh, man.
I mean, Charlie Hull ripping darts and fans passing her their numbers and her just kind of be like, this is just how I am. Like, I don't really know. I don't really think anything, you know, it kind of blew up, but like, this is how I live my life, which I thought was hilarious. Great brand play for all the Charlie H's out there. Proud to be on the team. But I thought that was hilarious. And then on the less hilarious side, watching Nelly Korda make a 10 on the par 3 12th, I believe, or third hole of the tournament, and then eventually miss the cut. I mean, that's the hole that kind of cooked her, was just kind of stunning. And I know there was there was a lot to be said about the way this course played, which is to say very difficult. There were only two players under par for the entire week. Your winner at 4 under and the second was 1 under. There were some comments Jenny Shin made on Twitter that I thought were really interesting. I'll read both these tweets. So she says, this leaderboard is, and I believe this was on, I believe this was after Friday's round. This leaderboard is shocking. I find it sad to see some of the best players with a double-digit score. This course punishes in an odd way. Difficult to explain. I played great yesterday, and today wasn't that far off. Hit too many fairways and greens for my outcome to be 8 over par. When I play poorly, I will admit it, take my loss, but it certainly didn't feel like bad golf today. I'm somehow playing in the weekend, so I'm grateful for the opportunity. Can't wait to experience heart-wrenching brutality again. And someone, to her credit as well, someone replied to her, major championship should not be easy. And she replied and says, agreed, it should be a test. Wish it was like this more often. So I say all this to say, and you and I have talked a little bit offline about Lancaster Country Club, how cool it looked out there in Pennsylvania this week. And just seeing a different venue in that condition is just kind of fun for a major championship. But, you know, rewind a couple weeks to the PGA of Valhalla and all the commentary online, the golf spaces of the internet talking about how it was way too easy and the winning score was way too low and it should never be like this for a major championship. Yet we turn the page to the U.S. Women's Open and you have the pre-tournament favorite and the star that everyone, you know, kind of wants to see just hitting the eject button 3 holes into the tournament and done for. And I wonder, what your thoughts are on that topic of just, you know, is there room for both? Do you like looking at this U.S. Women's Open leaderboard? Like, do you like seeing that for a U.S. Open sort of test? Or do you feel like it was a little too punishing for what we kind of, for the outcomes we saw coming out of this week?
Man, I'm in love with this golf course. I think Lancaster Country Club was so good. And the reason why it was so good was, from what I could tell, I've never been there. I've hardly watched enough of it on TV. But from what I have seen is that it's extremely difficult to get the golf ball below the hole. And on a golf course in which there's a ton of movement in the terrain, so you have a ton of uneven lies, from what I could tell on TV, just ball above your feet, ball below your feet, or you're playing 12 to 15 on an elevation on an uphill shot. So you can see a quarter of the pin and you're like, okay, I need to leave it below the hole. But there's a false front short of the green, they could roll back 40 yards. Like that, that to me is a really unique challenge that it's like, okay, you're hitting the fairways, but you also, you have to be so smart about, all right, where's my leaf? How do I get it below the hole? And I think for US Opens, you're so used to just trying to pepper the middle of the greens, pepper the middle of the greens. Mm-hmm. This actually, you're probably better off missing greens and being below the hole. And I think that's just a different challenge. And I thought there was some really cool features in the golf course that had penalty areas that were tucked either short or left or whatever it was, right, that came enough into play that made that 12th hole just be diabolical. They played it. I think they were saying they were hitting six irons into it. Nelly flushes one back bunker, doesn't exactly judge your bunker shot, right? Decides to go on the other side and instead of just pitching something behind the hole, knowing that she probably wasn't going to make that putt because how fast it is, she tries to chip it and leave it below the hole. And guess what? She did it twice, not getting it onto the green, rolls back into the penalty area. And just to talk briefly about Nelly Korda, how you mentioned that, you know, she's on this, been on this insane run. And I think Brandel Chamblee, actually, I was listening to him break down Nelly's U.S. Open runs and that she's not really ever been a contender. She's really struggled with keeping the high numbers off the card, like a lot of double bogeys and just not able to just keep those to bogeys and or, you know, save it pars at times. All this to say is that a bogey avoidance stat, it hasn't been good for Nelly Korda at the US Open. Now, has it been great other places? Yeah, she's the best player in the women's game. But this week, this was a, you know, right away, she probably could have taken her medicine on that chip shot, taken a six. And guess what? I guarantee you she would have probably finished around even par if she just didn't quite get so aggressive to try to make it all back and not get too far over par. And part of it too is, Charlie, when you play a really difficult golf course and you don't know how difficult it is yet and it's the third hole of your tournament, you don't know where the scores are going to fall. And if you tell yourself all you've been doing is shooting 66s and you're so used to your score being in red and the last thing you want to do is be 3-4 over par through the first three holes, you're thinking how, I mean, that is a long way to come back. I mean, there's plenty of golf after that, but still mentally just like rewiring your brain into, hey, triple bogey's not bad here. that's something that probably, isn't entering her brain at that point, but I guarantee you she's looking back on now thinking, man, I wish I just would have played for a double and just, you know, that would have been probably her biggest regret. But I really think it was a really amazing, amazing week. I mean, $2.4 million paid out to the winner, a really good week for the women's game. I loved how 16 played on Sunday being drivable. You know, you'd love to see Nelly at like competing to try to win this thing. Also Lexi Thompson, I think worth talking about her announcing her retirement as well.
Yes.
I would love to play the golf course myself. But I'd also like to see the men play there. I thought it was that good. And, do you see the tweet by Billy Horschel that he put out? He just said that, he was told by a top, this is a tweet. He said he was told by a top teacher that this may be the toughest US Open course he's ever seen, men or women. He's described shots like this, which is like a undulated lie, false fronts, fairways hardly ever with a flat lie, greens with a lot of slope. It's kind of just what I talked about, but really cool venue.
And I'll tell you, there is Christian, I believe his last name is Hafer. As a guy who often gets his last name pronounced, I hope he gives me a little bit of grace here. But Christian, who works with the Golfers Journal, I believe is a member at Lancaster, and all week long on his Instagram was putting out all these amazing pictures and videos of the place. And I was just salivating. I was like, I have to make my way to this golf course and play it because it just looked so cool. But then, yeah, it looked like such an exacting test, you know, of just, of course, we saw it play out in terms of like the actual tournament itself and you know, Nelly on 12, things like that. But just even the still images of like, man, I don't know where hit it on this hole. You know, I'm not sure where the miss is or you know, what I'm being asked to do here. So I think that's really cool. And I think it'd be super cool to see the men go here. And kind of to your point as well on the, you know, seeing a new venue. It's like you just don't know. You don't have a reference point for what the score is going to be. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a ton of like, you know, research you can do on how to play the course. You know, you have your practice round, of course, but you can never really fully gain the information you need within that limited period of time. So I think it's a unique wrinkle.
I like that as a player because it allowed the veterans to not have that advantage of knowing all the pins and all the just years of playing a golf course, how much value that is as far as just, you know, the different weather conditions, as far as the wind goes, when it gets firm, when it gets soft. That's what's cool about going to these the one-time venues that we play, you know, once or twice a year, that everybody's like, all right, can't wait. I love learning golf courses. That was one of my favorite parts of being a pro, is like, all right, what are they asking for me here? Where how does my game fit on this golf course, and how do I get around it? And more importantly, what is a good score?
I think that's you know, all stuff that as a viewer I think translates as well. Just like something, give me something different to look at, especially if it's a compelling and cool course like Lancaster is. And in the experience piece, there was a 15-year-old amateur in the running for some period of time, asterisk tally. So that bore itself. I was really cool to see a lot of amateur names near the top of the leaderboard, at least in the early going, where it's like, hey, you're kind of, you're free of scar tissue. You can just kind of go out there and try to play good golf. And certainly some of them did. So,
and it wasn't too long ago too, where Lexi Thompson, the 12-year-old, was playing.
Perfect.
Right. Is that where you're going?
Well, that's exactly right. That's where I was going to segue there, because that was kind of I guess it was interesting in hearing that announcement. I'm curious for your reflections on it. It was like the most surprising, unsurprising announcement I think I've ever heard. Because surprising, obviously, given just her age, you know, in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. But also, if you've been playing high leverage golf for that long, I mean, like, you know, I'm sitting here complaining about like golf trips and member guests and member tournaments. So I think I've played too much
golf.
You
have a pro schedule.
I have something that resembles a tour schedule. But, you know, can you just imagine, I mean, that long, her just having to grind and grind and grind. And I think there was maybe a little bit of room left in that statement for her playing maybe a limited schedule in certain events. At least from what I gather, just in the commentary, you know, after her announcement. So we'll kind of see where we see her in the future. But I can completely understand why she would make that decision, given, you know, the trajectory of her career. Curious to what you thought about it.
Well, I've known the Thompsons a long time. I've known Lexi a really long time. I played golf with her brother Curtis at LSU, been a good friend of mine for a long time. And it doesn't surprise me. I really think that Lexi's been doing this, like you said, for you know, since she was she's played a pro golf schedule since she was probably 15 years old, pretty much. You know, it's taxing. And I feel like for Lexi too, she had to wear some really crucial big moments in the game of golf, more so than any other player that I can really think of, and just how taxing that may be on the mind and body over the years, even though she is 1000% one of the most talented players to play the women's game that I can think of. Just her ability to, I mean, just the tee to green strength, as far as how far she could hit it and accurately. I've played with her before and I'm like, I can't hit anything off the heel or she's going to drive me. And that's serious. I mean, she's going to absolutely hammer it. But when you just kind of talk about it, it's like, I'd heard that she wasn't going to play pro golf after 30. And I was like, all right, wait, you know, is that actually going to happen? But when you kind of look at the women's schedule, and we kind of talked a little bit about Bobby McIntyre earlier, and just the type of schedule a DP World Tour player is used to playing. Well, so, you know, you make a lot of friends along the way on the DP World Tour, because you go to a lot of places, a lot of countries, and you're stamping that passport quite a bit. And the women compared to the men. So like you said earlier, we primarily stay in the States and we go to play the Open Championship. And now the Scottish is starting to, it's another event. You'll see a player or two make their way to Aussie Open or the South African, whatever the Open is. And a lot of times it's the guys are paid to go and play in these events. But the women, though, they start their year overseas. They come back and play in the States for a bit. Then they go over, play in Europe, come back to the States, and then they go finish over in Asia. It's just it's a grind of a schedule. And combine the travel with what it is to play pro golf for that long. And two, it's, I feel like men and women are a little different in this, and I may be speaking a little out of turn on all this. I don't know what your take is on this, but I really do think Lexi wants to, if it's get married, start a family, just get away from the pro game. And it's, I think for a male, it's much easier to keep trying to play the game, keep playing the game, keep providing, keep chasing the dream, where it's a little different for women, because if you're going to start a family, that's not, I mean, you've seen it with Amanda, like it's, yeah, being pregnant and playing golf and managing your emotions out on the golf course. And then also raising kids. Like I can't imagine how these women are able to do that, because I couldn't.
I think it's a really interesting topic discussion. And I think it's actually, I think it's less of like a, you know, men versus women thing, and more of just a, how are you wired? You know, like what are your life priorities? Like, I think people forget that, you know, there's something, we all know these players in the context of being professional athletes. We follow and watch on TV. And it's like, no, they're also human beings too, that do things outside of the sport we all see them play. I think, you know, My wife is, you know, a former Division I athlete, clearly the better athlete of anyone in the family. And it's, you know, very interesting to your point, seeing her have to reckon with the changes in your body, going from someone who is incredibly athletic to, you know, hey, this takes a huge, huge physical toll, carrying a child, you know, 9 months, you know, giving birth, everything on the back end of that, you know, it was, you know, just C-sections, all sorts of things like that. Like that is so hard on your body. And so if
you can't imagine, I can't imagine. And we're not even Lexi, like we're talking like she's already starting her family. Like these are just conversations I'm sure she's thinking about well down the line, but that's it. There's been plenty of women's players that have played professionally still when they're pregnant and have kids.
It's unbelievable.
And it's just like, how in the world? It's so incredible.
Superheroes. Yeah. I mean, this piece is not applied to Lexi, because I don't know what her life ambitions are, career ambitions, whatever, but I think there's a point to be made there where it's just, I think it's easier in some ways as a man to be able to, you know, pursue some of these career things depending on where you are as a family. But I also think that, you know, why I kind of say it just depends on how you're wired is, I imagine some of the hesitance of American men, you know, to play a global tour is being away from their family. Like if you're wired that way, and I'm not going to like, you know, place, I'm not gonna say this guy's a family guy, this guy's not
that's
a family guy.
That's a great point.
But like, I guess, you know, again, like having a child, you know, even in the limited travel that we've done, you know, with this show, to really kind of get meta here, is like, you know, that's been hard. I mean, you know this, you've been on the road all the time. It's hard to be away from your kids. And so it would be really, really tough to be on the road all the time. And I think you make a great point too about the LPGA schedule, how that's a very global tour, you know, with the way they kind of wind through things and go to different regions of the world, go to places where a lot of their sponsors are. And so I can totally see how that would be a grind, whether or not you have ambitions of starting a family. And if you did, even harder, but you know, even you know, if you've done it since you're 15, you're close to 30, I can see how you'd be ready to call time on it. And I do think there's something to be said for, you know, just the wiring of an individual. Just like it's super cool to play a professional sport at the highest level, absolutely. But I think, you know, for a lot of human beings, there's more than that. And so you just might come to a point where you say, I made enough money, I'm content with what I did professionally. Sure, I could have won more, but I also could have won a lot less. And I'm just ready to call time on this and go pursue other things that fulfill me beyond this game. And I'm that none of that is a projection on what I think Lexi's doing or what, you know, what it is or isn't, but just the larger topic. I can understand why you might arrive at a decision like that.
Yeah. And I think one hell of a career too. And what she does after the game too is even not playing, I think she'll still have a great impact on the game. Similar to, you know, I think Michelle Wee's been a really good example of what you can do once you stop playing the game. Annika Swarmstrand the same, you know, just being able to still impact the game without having to tee it up every week. And maybe it'll be a semi-retirement thing to where she goes away and it maybe comes back. I don't know. That wouldn't surprise me, but maybe see her play just sparingly, I think would be great as well. Like similar to where we see Annika play here and there, but she's a really chill girl. I mean, every time in my time spending around her, she's great to hang with. And I think just being able to get away and not have to just be so, you know, this game could drive you crazy. So it'll be probably great for her to just be able to be like, you know what, I can just focus on me, can focus on my family, focus on, you know, going out and having a cocktail and playing golf and enjoying the game.
100%. A really impressive career. One of the greatest Americans, you know, to ever play the game on the women's side. And it is funny to kind of put a bow on this discussion on the Annika piece. You know, the way after she put the clubs up, the way she came back to playing the game was her son, Will, falling in love with it and her going out and hitting balls with him during the pandemic saying, you know what, I think I miss this a little bit. So, I mean, there's the whole family tie and why this game is so great for a number of reasons. But, man, we have covered just about everything that we set out to cover and then some. We made all-star team. How about us? look at us. Who would have thought? I want to leave you with one final Hope Valley member story, because I saw something today. I'm not going to list any names. I don't think I'll ever see again on a golf course, like rarer than a hole in one. It's the most bizarre thing of all time. I saw a teed up ball. Player makes backswing. Ball somehow starts to lean as he's making his downswing, falls off the tee, does not break downswing, hits the ball as it's falling off the tee, like caught it, like just rerouted, made the adjustment, like and picked it. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen on the golf course. And we were just like, what just happened there? Very, very bizarre.
What was the ruling? Was re-hit?
The ruling was,
I think you have to re-hit.
I'm going to protect the integrity of the competition and not disclose the full ruling on this podcast. But just know that it happened and it was highly bizarre. So
I love a good shady member group ruling.
I'm just here to protect the integrity of the competition, Smiley. That's all I can say.
Why don't we open your books and why don't we see what your handicap really is, Charlie?
It's lower than it needs to be. It needs to be a lot higher. I tell you what, that I can. Here we are saying nice things about the USGA and they're hosting at Lancaster and excited for Pinehurst, but like I got a few gripes on your handicap, your gen system. So we'll get to that another time. But now that a fun recap, and man, we have a cool one coming up this week. Jackson Koivun, the Haskins Award winner from Auburn, who is a team national champion, just defeated Florida State a few days ago. And you caught up with Jackson on that and a number of other things. So that'll be in the feeds on Wednesday, along with like a little brief memorial preview.
Man, I love young kids, man. Just the innocence of their youth. And it's cool to kind of like put yourself in their shoes, you know, just kind of be like, all right, if I was Jackson right now, what would I be thinking about? And it's like they have nothing but just the world in front of them. You know, I think it's the coolest thing ever. They don't have they don't have kids. All they can think about right now is just golf, baby. Just playing some golf. And he is playing some damn good golf.
I love that time of life. I love the time of life we're in now, but I also miss that a lot of different ways. So very cool. Looking forward to sharing that with you all this week. So that's it for this pod, Smiley. I say we just, you know, unless you have any final thoughts, just wrap it up and thank the listeners and the viewers. And we'll be back here to talk to you all very, very soon.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.